30 years ago, 55% of men reported at least having six close friends. Today, that's essentially cut in half. 27% of men have six or more close friends. And if you think about like in the context of how do we think about like our pillars or pyramid and what we prioritize, you know, there's a study that says essentially exercise can lower mortality risk by 20 to 40%. Having a good diet is more or less the same at 30. But being a good romantic relationship, having friends, and being connected to your community can lower mortality risk by 45%.
On today's podcast, I welcome back Jason and Colleen Wacope, the co-founders and co-CEOs of MindBodyGreen, the leading independent media brand dedicated to well-being with 15 million monthly unique visitors. I'm welcoming them back on the show to talk about their newest book, The Joy of Well-Being, a practical guide to a happy, healthy, and long life. I look up to them both, not only in the business they've built, but more importantly, the balance they've created for themselves and their family. On today's podcast, we'll talk about achieving 80% of your maximum health and eight practices that will help you get there. We'll also explore how spirituality and human connection have a major impact on your longevity and your health. Let's welcome Jason and Colleen back to the show. Jason and Colleen, welcome to the show. This is your second appearance. If people want to go back and learn a little bit more about you, they can head to episode 32, one of my first episodes, two of my favorite people, founders of MindBodyGreen. You know, you guys are in contact with some of the world's best functional MDs, practitioners, yoga instructors, gurus, shamans, you name it. You guys are on top of all the wellness trends. And like we were talking about before the show, a lot of people in the eye of the storm, in the machine of wellness, can get caught up in trends and not stick to the basics and not really filter things through the lens or the filter of, would this work for my lifestyle? Does it work for my family? Does it work for me at this stage in my life, this age in my life, the stress levels that I have? And you guys have always been just solid like a rock, like even keeled. You know, listening to experts, but always looking at it from the lens of, is this doable? Can it be something I can get consistent with? And how do I find the joy in front of it? Which I'm so excited to invite you back because your new book, The Joy of Well-Being, A Practical Guide to a Happy, Healthy, and Long Life, is being published and out in the world. It's like the, we call it the third baby. But Jason, I know you wrote another book, so maybe you were fourth. But thank you for being back. I'm clearly gushing because I love you guys, but thanks for coming back on the show.
Oh, it is such an honor to be back, and the feeling is mutual. We love and admire you, and not only love your expertise and your voice, but we also love how grounded you are, and we love your values, and you know, it's family first, and you're just such a solid person. We're honored and so happy to be with you.
Well, I think, you know, that's why I look up to you guys so much and what you've built, what you've created, because it our values do align. You know, you love each other and you love your kids. And you built an amazing, huge, big business. And it's like so admirable. But never did I ever question what was your biggest priority, which is your happiness, your health, your family, and really, you know, being grounded with all of it. So thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your time and talking about your new book, The Joy of Well-Being. I want to dive into what inspired you guys to write it. You talked a little bit about before, but I want to capture all of it. Why write this book right now?
So I think you hit the nail on the head with the why, in that in terms of the longevity conversation, you know, we've advanced so much in the past decade. And where we sit in 2023, there's so much great information. There's so many great experts. Yet, so much of it is just completely inaccessible for anyone who has a job and a family and doesn't have 3 hours in the morning for protocols. and the resources for all the gadgets and the toys and the things. And it feels like the longevity conversation is for the 1% of the 1%. Mm-hmm. And with all that said, in this process, we identified a lot of the science that actually shows that we can kind of get you like 80% there with practices that don't take a lot of time, don't require a lot of resources, and don't like suck the joy out of your life. Because when you go down this rabbit hole, you know, the eye of the storm, as you said, you can quickly get to a place where it's completely consuming you, and the joy in being well is completely lost.
Yeah. I think we have a complicated relationship with the word wellness, even though we were pioneers within the space and started Mind Body Green almost 15 years ago. When I look at the quote unquote wellness landscape right now, I don't really know how much of it I see in myself and our values and our platform and brand's values. I see a lot of uncivil discourse on social media where people aren't really open-minded. And, you know, to Jason's point, I see a lot of rigid protocols, and I don't embody these values. I can't fit them into my life at this current life stage. And then when you take a step back and are like, what are the things that we value most? What are the things that truly deliver that ROI on how we feel about our own health and our family's health? It's, we actually agree with so much of what's out there, but it's not what's being reflected in kind of the wellness dialogue. People are incentivized a lot of times to have very narrow points of view that are polarizing because social media is how we consume a lot of our media. And I hope this book can be a reawakening and a call to infuse joy into how we think about our own well-being, and also to encourage people to take control of their own health and happiness. Because at the end of the day, you can listen to everything, you can follow everyone, but you're the only one who's going to know what's right for you and your body and your family.
And what's the point of extending health span if you're miserable and you don't have friends and you don't look forward to what's ahead of you? And, you know, that's something that shouldn't be lost. And I think in our world, some of the tougher work is around emotional well-being and spiritual well-being. And I think most of us know, I'm assuming a listener knows, if, you know what, I'm not eating as well as I should, or I'm not getting the exercise. But I think when you start to ask the questions of, you know, how am I doing with my relationships? How am I doing with purpose? Those are a little bit harder. And you would argue probably more important.
I would definitely agree with you. We can get so caught up, especially online, in regards to protocols, like following up experts and saying, okay, the protocol is this much time in a sauna, this much side outside looking at the sun, this much, this is when I turn off my phone and get in bed, and we got to, you know, you can't watch that show anymore and you got to go to bed. And like, you know, you get caught up in the details, and then it isn't joyful to be like, yeah, I'll jump, you know, let's go for a walk in the neighborhood. I'm like, the timing is off for my circadian rhythm. Like, it's like, you know, it just gets to its place.
The protocols are a path to divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is no joy in that, right? It's like when it's thought of in, you know, the way that you, and we'll talk about your practices, the way you present your practices is like very, you know, just things that can help you get 80% there and to find the joy, to find the connection, to find this, your spirituality, your purpose. Like, all of those things bring so much joy to our life. We can't just look at a book like The Blue Zones and say, well, they did this and that, without understanding, like, in these places, there are tribes and communities of people that are so interconnected, and they're all in nature, and they have purpose of like growing their own food, or, you know, taking care of their own sheep, for, you know, if you're talking about certain parts of the world. But it just, you bring up such a good, refreshing point that there needs to be so much joy, and things just need to be looked at as like a, hey, high five yourself if you get that done. Hey, I'm excited. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's just about adding joy, adding practices that provide wellness.
So well said.
Let's talk about, for you guys, you obviously have a why behind this, which is to make things approachable. I mean, I completely agree with you. Since moving back down to Orange County, Southern California, where I grew up, and sort of reintegrating with some high school friends and college friends, you know, my friends aren't working in the wellness world. They're not wellness influencers that have the ability to write a blog post, you know, do a brand deal and have the rest of their day free. I mean, they are dropping their kids off at preschool or elementary school. They're going to their 9 to 5 or 9 to 7 job working in an office building. And like they're there and then they're worried about like, well, okay, when I get home, like how am I going to get dinner on the table? And then we're going to do bedtime. And we're going to do it all over again. Like, where do they fit in their workouts, the sun in the morning and things like that? So for you guys in your life, like you created flexibility, but how much flexibility is there for you? What does your day look like? And what are some of these practices that you think are attainable to get people to the 80%?
So our day has a lot of the same constraints that I think so many people have. Whether, you know, for us, it's kids and school and drop off. And, you know, we do run a company on normal business hours, which for us is 9 to 6 p.m. And I think we've had to just be extraordinarily intentional about thinking of what is the ROI of everything that we're doing and what's going to have the biggest kind of bang for our buck. Because there was that point in time, which of course, if I wish I could go back and revisit, I would probably live my life a little differently. But in my 20s, I was that person who was trying everything. I was a fitness omnivore. I tried every single workout class. You know, it was back in the day of ClassPass. I tried every healing modality. And then you get to your point where you're like, well, this is perhaps working for other people, but it's not really bringing me joy. And you have these narrow windows in life when you are able to move. And when our oldest daughter was starting kindergarten for us, it was a time when we decided to move from New York to Miami. And I think that was really a big awakening for us on the importance of community. And when you're in a new area, you have just this open-mindedness that we didn't have for 13 years in New York. I would describe it like the first day of college where everyone's new and is like, hi, I'm from New York. How about you? So the rekindling on connection. And I've been really aggressive for me in terms of finding other females with similar values and trying to be friends in a way that I didn't do for 13 years. So whether it's at school or whether it's about finding groups of people with similar cultural interests, like that's been a really important unlock because this is going to be our home for, you know, probably the next 15 years, if not longer. In other parts of our life, sleep is something that I talk so much about. And it's just such a deeply personal chapter because in my early 20s, I had 3 nights in a row where I was unable to get to sleep. And I ended up in the hospital where they gave me a Xanax and not really much instruction of how could I avoid this in the future, looking at my life habits. So sleep is something that I'm extraordinarily thoughtful about. And yep, I do try to get my sunlight, but I'm not going to be too hard on myself if it doesn't work with drop-off schedule. It's more about, you know, working in the coffee outside when I can, being extraordinarily thoughtful about a caffeine curfew. What works for other people, I know doesn't work for my super sensitive body rhythms, but I also break the rules intentionally. And I know that if I were to ask a sleep doctor if I should watch TV in bed, he would say absolutely not, but I love watching TV in bed. And it brings us a lot of joy as a couple. We kind of need to exit the wellness world at the end of our day and watch things like Formula One on Netflix or whatever you know, is the trending show of the moment. And we've found that to be a really important part of our practice. And even though we're extraordinarily intentional about things, we're also adults and we know what works for us. And watching Formula One isn't going to have the same impact on my sleep as an espresso at 3 p.m.
Yes.
And then, you know, the other kind of biggest unlock for me personally is really evolving kind of how I think about movement. In my 20s, I did have the luxury of time and could dabble, explore, be that fitness omnivore. And I genuinely enjoyed a lot of these classes. But now I don't have that time to go to an hour yoga class. And once you add on transit time, it's just not doable. I love to integrate walking, which has so many great studies around. If you get in your 10,000 steps a day, there's a UK study of about 70,000 people that you're decreasing your dementia risk by 51%. I love integrating the stairs into everything I do. And I've also introduced resistance training. That's all done in a home gym. I'm not a gym person. I'm talking, you know, really functional exercises like squats and lunges and push-ups and things that most of us can kind of carve out time to do within the day. I think most people would look at the ways in which wellness is incorporated into our life and be like, that's extraordinarily minimalist. And that's exactly, you know, kind of what we're trying to do in that we want to be able to live our lives incorporate the things that bring us joy, that are simple and work for our family, and not feel like there's, you know, something we have to check off a list.
Going back to your question of this, the busy parent or the busy, doesn't even have to be a parent, someone who's busy working life. Mm-hmm. What do you find time for? There's a lot of talk in longevity about, you know, VO2 max and being in zone two, and you can measure your lactate and all of this. And these people are brilliant, but it's like, I can't do that. I don't have the time. But in reality, how can you get there? You can take the stairs and do so at a fast pace. We have a rule. It helps that I also don't like elevators. So that's a huge help. If it's under five flights, we take the stairs. And guess how long that takes? It's like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It's really not a time suck. And if you check your heart rate, like, you're probably going to be in zone two, which is what you want, and then can go down. And so that's like an easy win. And if you have access to a staircase, like in your commute, don't take the elevator, take the stairs. Mm-hmm. Once a week, I will do the top of our condo building, which is 22 flights. Mm-hmm. I'm in pretty good shape, but how long does that take me to get to the top? It's under 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's really not a lot of time, but it really gets my heart rate up. So if you're struggling to fight, if you don't like running, I hate running. If you see me running, call the police.
Running from something.
I'm running from someone. Call the police. I'm in trouble. So I'll do that. I don't like spinning. I don't like the treadmill. Take the stairs. What's also come into focus for us is the power of resistance training. And that also doesn't have to be going to the gym. You know, the greatest asset you have is your body weight. And there's a lot you can do with sit-ups, push-ups, air squats. And, you know, we're in Miami, so there's definitely the vanity component to all of this. You know, mm-hmm. everyone's shape here, but the why for us, it's about longevity. I'm 48, Colleen's 43. Sarcopenia is real. 13% of their people in their 60s start suffering from it. And 50% of people in their 80s are living with it. And, you know, you think about bone density, we lose up to 1% a year at the age of 40. And for me, I had this like kind of funny aha moment where I wasn't really weighing myself. This is like 6 months ago. And then I got on the scale and I had lost, it was like 7 or 8 pounds. And I'm like, what? I don't get it. Like, it's something wrong. And I looked in the mirror and I'm like, oh my God, my ass is flattening. I'm getting like old white man flat butt. And I'm like a basketball player. And I'm just like, well, this kind of makes sense since I really haven't done anything for my legs in 25 years.
Yeah.
So I started to do squats and, you know, the butt's coming back. But besides, it was this wake up call, like, wow, I'm kind of losing muscle mass. And okay, so like, why? There's, you know, this crazy statistic from the CDC. If you're over 65, there's a 25% chance that you'll fall. So 1 in 4 people over the age of 65 fall. If you fall, the chances you have of falling again double. So fall once, you're twice as likely to fall again. If you fall and break your hip, this is really sad. There's a 30 to 40% chance you'll die within a year. So, and it's not the fall that necessarily kills you. It's everything that happens after, the isolation, the possible infection at the hospital, like all the, and we've anecdotally, we've seen this play out, unfortunately, with a lot of friends. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind, you know, resistance training or body weight training, resistance training too, is one, you're building that armor. So maybe if you do fall, you break the fall. Two, you're also like, you're working on your hand eye, your strength, your coordination. So maybe you're strong enough and you got the coordination where you can grab something so that you don't fall. And, you know, if you do find yourself in a hospital, and if anyone has ever done this, if you find yourself lying on your back, you will soon, you'll be having another child, you lose weight. And you lose muscle, and it happens really fast. And you need that. It's protection. And in order to build muscle, you know, the science is like unequivocal, like beyond bulletproof here. You need to do some sort of strength training, resistance training. And along with that, you need to ingest enough protein. And as you know, that's a very emotional conversation for all the reasons. But clearly the RDA 0.36 grams, I always think of grams, not kilograms. Mm-hmm. It's like the bare minimum to survive and thrive. And if you talk to any experts you've had on, it's usually double that amount. Mm-hmm. And so you need to ingest protein. And if you're 100% plant-based or vegan, it's just very difficult to do because you need the leucine content for muscle protein synthesis. You need that 2.5 grams of leucine per the 25 to 30. It's like on a percentage basis. Otherwise, the protein doesn't count. It's like a waste. For kids, it doesn't matter, but for us adults. So how do you get that? You have to eat fish. You have to eat meat. You have to eat dairy. Mm-hmm. You can do it, but the amount of lentils, and it's just very difficult to do. So with all that said, we do some sort of training. It could be a couple days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Be in your home on a call, sit-ups, push-ups. Like in the book, we've got some workouts. We focus on eating protein after. We take the stairs. These are some of like the non-starters. As you think about the nutrition and exercise pillars, everyone can do. We're not going to tell you in the book what diet is right for you because only you know. And the example we use, two friends of ours, Mark Sisson, who we saw on Friday, who's 69 and is in the best shape of his life. And he feels amazing.
Yeah.
And how does Mark eat? He's almost carnivore.
Yeah.
He doesn't eat a lot of processed food, if any, and he works out like crazy. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Rich Roll, who's 56, who's 100% plant-based. He also works out like crazy, doesn't eat a lot of processed food, and he's doing great and looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And so who is anyone to say what Mark is doing is right or wrong? And the same for Rich. Nobody. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, and if their blood panels are great and their lipid profiles are great, then fantastic. And we walk through that in the book. But like, I think where we land there is eat real food. You know, I do think if you're lean pescatarian or vegetarian, you're probably going to have to find some protein powders if you're serious about muscle, unfortunately, or fortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll pause there. Like those are our two big ones in terms of those pillars, which can be multiple hour episodes.
You used the word sarcopenia, and I just want to make sure that our audience knows what that means. I've heard of osteoporosis and osteopenia, which is the loss of bone. Can you talk about sarcopenia, sarcopenia rates as we age, and what is the cause of sarcopenia?
So essentially, it's aging, and you're losing muscle mass, and you're also losing bone density. And this is when, as we think about health span, it's not just living a long life. I don't think anyone wants to be 90 and frail and feel like they can't walk without assistance or feel fragile, that you can't do the things they want to do. Do you want to be able to pick up your grandchild or great grandchild without worrying you're going to throw something out or you don't have the strength? And I think it's this idea. I think what do you want to do? Colleen talks about this in the book. It's like, what are the things you want to be doing when you're old? And are you physically equipped to do them? We're in Florida now, so Colleen loves pickleball.
Yes.
You want to be playing.
It's so fun. It's the best. Brings me a lot of joy.
You know, and I think that's the why. It's not just like, okay, there's this crazy statistic about falling and then dying. And sure, that's scary and that's real. Mm-hmm. It's also what type of life, and we want to talk about this in the book, encourage people to walk through that exercise. If you're fortunate to live to your 80s, 90s, and so on, what do you want to be doing?
Yeah.
What are the investments you can make in your health and well-being routine that can help get you there?
I know we've talked a lot about family. And I think that mindset applies to it too. It's, you know, when you start thinking of your future life, for me, I thought a lot about, I want to be with my grandkids. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you want to be with your grandkids now, or 20 years from now, 30 years from now, you have to be making those investments in your kids, building those relationships now.
Kids have to like you. Otherwise, by the time they have children, they may not even want to be around you.
Yeah. And I think thinking through kind of where we wanted to be in our 70s, in our 80s, in our 90s, and how we want to be interacting with our children and our grandchildren, and seeing very different ways in which our own parents and other friends' parents are able to get on the floor and crawl around with grandkids or not, go in the pool with grandkids or not, mm-hmm. has really encouraged and kind of shifted the way I approach my own health and well-being.
And I know you've experienced this too. Both of our parents had serious surgeries this year. My mother had her kidney removed. God bless. She's okay. She's here helping out with the kids, but she lost a kidney. That's like, she's got one left. Gotta work.
Right.
Colleen's dad had a blood clot in his stomach and could have died. And he's okay. And was laid up in the hospital for
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And they were both, you know, doing fine in their mid 70s. And it was just kind of, you know, for us, not a wake up call, but just really hit home. You know, what are the things you should take care of now so they don't blow up later in life?
Yeah, it's about, well, we only have a certain amount of time to be intentional about things and being really clear on where you want to spend your time and how you want to be intentional so you can manifest the future that you want, which is swimming with your grandkids in the pool, getting on the ground, being able to stand up with unassisted from the floor to make sure, you know, your leg strength is there, your stability is there. Your balance is there. I mean, we talk a lot about the fringe wellness things happening and, you know, what supplements are you taking or what does day in the life of you look like with food? But I love the simplicity of getting clear on what is the most important for longevity and for functionality later in life.
I want to take a break from the podcast right now and I want to give you a gift. I don't want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code podcast10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. We don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrated that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not going to have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com, put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart, and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in.
So now that we have a better idea of what your days sort of look like and where your priorities lie, can you talk about the 8 practices specifically that help you achieve 80% of your maximum health? And for the things that you've touched on, you can explain, but in shorter detail.
Yeah.
So sleep is a big one. We definitely have our sleep routine. I like data. So I wear my Oura Ring. I wear my Whoop. We have an 8 sleep mattress. There you go. So I actually like seeing that. Colleen does not.
Yeah. There's actually some studies around even just having an alarm clock in your room if you have sleep anxiety, how that can further exacerbate sleep anxiety. Mm-hmm. And that study to me, like, is how I approach metrics around sleep. It was super fascinating. It was a treasure trove of information. I really enjoyed it. You know, sometimes I needed that data to help me understand
how I should be thinking about my alcohol intake to optimize my sleep. But then I'm done because it actually exacerbates my anxiety around sleep. So I think we have there's a lot of common ground in kind of how we approach it, but also knowing we are both built so differently, we have a slightly different approach. I think breath is just such an important thing to talk about because it's something we do 17,000 to 30,000 times a day. And I'm a little disappointed that it took me so long in life to realize that I was breathing all wrong. And, you know, the importance of breathing through your nostrils and starting that practice during the day, when you're doing the dishes, when you're in the car, when you're listening to a podcast, like making that investment during the day so that when you're asleep for hopefully 8 sound hours a night, you're breathing through your nose in the most thoughtful way. And because of the relationship between how we breathe and our anxiety, like for me personally, I think that's been a huge unlock that I wish I had discovered a lot earlier in life.
And in the book, we go through some, you know, obviously nasal breathing is the easiest one for most people, but for some, it actually is difficult. But we also go through different methods in the book of box breathing, 4-7-8, and all the different modalities that you can incorporate. But that's a big one. It also can dramatically affect your sleep, your mouth breathing. That's a big one.
Stress is an interesting one for us to touch on because kind of goes back to really empowering people to create their own rituals, create and understand what actually works for your body. And, you know, there is so much wonderful dialogue happening around cold plunges right now. And I can appreciate the science and I can appreciate the hormetic stress and like conversation around it. But there is no way that I'm starting or ending my day with that because I have Raynaud's. I turn purple when it gets really cold. And I know that that is not the practice that's going to bring me a lot of joy. While I can also appreciate that it works for so many people.
When we were writing the book, our publisher was like, why are you including this if you don't do it? Our response was, we actually think that's really important because if you know this well, a lot of people in our space won't talk about things that they don't do. Or it's against their philosophy. And our view is, look, the science is really strong. We just hate the cold. And it does not like, this is not going to bring us joy. We're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to do everything. And I think there is this pressure is you have to do everything and check every box, like the protocol. Oh, well, you know, I do 10 in the cold, then I go to the sauna, then I go back to the cold. Oh, got to do more. And it's too much. And for this one, we said, you know what? We're just sitting out.
That is... I think what's always been so admirable about My Body Cream is that you haven't taken a stance in regards to nutrition, in regards to what modality is best. It was always like, here's the modality. Here's what the science says. Here's an expert or a researcher or a doctor who believes in it, loves it. We've interviewed them. Here's some regular people's experience with that. Here's how you can include it if it works for you. For a lot of people, it's trying something on, seeing if it fits and deciding knowing cold plunging with you that it's not in the cards. It's not what you guys want to do. But like Colleen using the Oura Ring and realizing it's actually great. I got some data from it. It was useful. I'm not going to wear it anymore though, because it's creating more anxiety than good. And I do this with clients in regards to who they're following online. You know, they may be following wellness influencers that share their entire day. And for some, that might be really motivating. They're like, oh, that's actually a great breakfast idea. And for others, they're like, really? That's how people eat all day? It's triggering. It's traumatic. It makes them feel worse about the choices that they made throughout the day when they wouldn't even have overanalyzed their food choices as much as they are had they not seen that 90-second reel. Right. So it depends on who you are and how you're affected by information. And I think that's where having a filter and deciding what you're saying isn't controversial. Sleep, breath, nutrition, exercise, stress levels, finding joy in your life. Like these are all really, really important and big buckets for people to take a minute and say, what kind of workout do I like to do? What brings me joy? If it's pickleball, great. Like when you said, what do you want to be doing when you're 70? I had an image where you'll see like the grandma doing yoga in like their 70s. And you're like, how is she doing that pose at that age? Like, I just want Justin Timberlake blaring through the speakers in a yoga class. And for me to be able to be down on the ground in a Shiva squat, flexible, having fun. Like there's so much joy I get from that practice. And I don't have the time right now, or I'm not making the time right now, because my priorities are being pregnant, being with my kids, and like getting the exercise in where I can. And that might be short bouts at home or outside in nature. But I do really look forward to that flexibility. And I know that it's coming back. Like, I know that I'll have more time for that at a different stage in my life. But it's just important to like really look at these buckets individually and say, like, what works for me might not work for everyone else, or what works for everyone else might not work for me. But to not fill your to-do list with things you can't do every day and have this expectation that you can't follow through with. Because it's like you're never going to get consistent on achieving that 80% of your maximum health that you're talking about for well-being if we can't just pick the most important priorities that align with our life and bring us joy and say, I'm going to focus my time here.
Totally. And I think throughout these decades of life, like the role that all of these play ebbs and flows. I agree that I look forward to a point in time where I could get back to an hour and a half or an hour yoga class in a studio. Right now, driving to the studio after drop-off causes you more stress. You got to really evaluate kind of how you're thinking about what actually is the ROI from the movement in your life, because I always want to feel a little more de-stressed after movement, not an increase in or an uptick in stress.
Right. So how are you guys managing stress then if cold plunging isn't in your repertoire?
I think connection and purpose are big for us. And something, you know, a little bit more for my why, you know, I'm 48. We've got two little girls. My father died of heart disease at 47. My paternal grandfather died of cancer at 44. And my maternal grandfather died of heart disease at 49. So men in my family do not have a good track record in longevity, but I believe in epigenetics. I believe that stops with me, and that I think we all have something. Maybe it's our cardiovascular disease, but there's something in all of our genes and our families' histories we're not maybe thrilled about. And I also believe that nutrition and exercise play a significant role, which we've talked about, but I really bring it back to connection and purpose. That's become paramount with me. And I've found whenever I haven't been doing well, there's been something underlying. And I've also seen how when I've been anxious or stressed, how that almost has brought on illness. And, you know, a study, it's my favorite study, and I love talking about it. I think the health and wellness audience needs to hear it over and over, including me. It's the Rosetto study. And Rosetto was this small town in Pennsylvania, very close-knit Italian community in the 1950s. And this is around the time where heart disease arrived in America. And the rate of heart attacks of people over 65 was like half of that in Rosetto. And men under 55, there was non-existent, zero. And so they went to study Rosetto. And what were these people doing? They were smoking, they were drinking, they were eating lots of pasta and meatballs, and they were like, this makes zero sense. Most people would agree these are not the good things to do if you're thinking about longevity. However, what they found is these people had incredibly strong social connections. Multi-generational living was common. There were lots of parties, parades, enjoying wine and food with friends. And then the 1960s, the community starts to break apart. People start to move away. And guess what? Heart disease arrives, catches up with the national average. And to me, that is just, you know, you think about you moving back to Orange County, us moving to Miami. And there's a great, on Friday, we hung out with Marxist and Todd White and JJ Virgin, which was amazing. We're all in town. You know, like thinking about community and people, it's something I lost sight of. And in my 20s, I had such a strong group of friends from high school and college. You know, I went to Columbia in the city. So basically everyone would stay in the city and we'd go out all the time. It would be a party, too much partying, but like it was such a great group of 15 to 20 friends and we were always there. And then work happened and kids, and I like lost touch with a lot. And I'm like working on this because, you know, kind of disappeared. And I get like work happened, kids happened. It's like, oh crap, I haven't seen this friend or that friend. And I just think it's so critical, and it's something I'm really focused on, we're really focused on. And I think also men are particularly bad here. I think women are much better about keeping in touch, but men are really, do really poor in this department, including myself, and I need to work on. I cannot be discounted. I don't know if that was really the answer to the question.
No, I will say, I guess I can speak for my husband on this topic. You know, I think the two things that really make for a full life for Chris, I really love our marriage. Like, we've been together for since 2007. Like, I feel like he walked in the room and I was like, you're going to be my husband. Like, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I fell hard. And we've been together for a long time. We've been through a lot of ups and downs, but I feel really solid about our marriage. And we're very lucky to have healthy children and a house over our, you know, before 40, figure, you know, we made it. But the two things that really impact him on an emotional level and like a spiritual level is when he gets private alone time to surf, which is his flow state. And he's out there with guys that aren't his best friends, but he'll know from the community, like kind of if you were to go play a basketball pickup game, hey, yeah, hey. And you're just like, talk about the weather, like you have kids, right? Okay. They're surfing and having fun. And the second is when he gets to be with his UCLA bras, is what he calls it, on, you know, his Signal chat. It used to be a WhatsApp chat, Signal chat now, you know. It's like they chat and they'll like send sports scores or whatever. But the other night UCLA was in the, you know, in the tournament, and he was like, we're going to meet up with like three of them, not like the 10 or 12 or 15 of them that all love each other so much, but just a couple of them. Like, we're going to go watch the game and we're going to eat dinner at the bar where the screens are. And I was proud of him because I looked and Bash was in tears, like, daddy loves his friends more than us. And I was like, daddy's here every day, all day. Like, daddy, he made a commitment to go be with his friends. It's really important for his health to like be with his friends. And we can't discredit that, because I was looking at it when I was explaining to Bash, and like, I don't remember the last time your dad did this. Like, it definitely, it's March and it wasn't this year, you know, it was like maybe last year or someone's, I don't know. I'm like, someone had a bachelor party or a 40th birthday or something, but like, we only do it in really special occasions when it could just be as easy as, hey, you want to come meet me and watch this game and like, let's chat and have that camaraderie. When he has those moments to himself and comes back to us, it's like the lights are on. And he's so happy and fulfilled in a full way, not in just a, this should be the only thing that makes me happy way, like my family or my career.
Yes.
And I think what we're learning is there's so many different levels of connection, and text, WhatsApp, Signal serves a purpose. Video, Zoom, FaceTime, catch up serve a purpose. And I love that my kids can talk to their maternal grandparents through it. But there is such a large value to the IRL connection piece that I was reading recently, a Wall Street Journal piece about how women are now scheduling in this IRL connection time, because it does have such an important impact. And one of the stories we bring up in the book is, we actually learned about through our friend Kate Fagan, who wrote this amazing book, What Made Maddie Run. And it's the story of a girl who was getting a lot of support before she unfortunately took her life, but it was all over text message, and how the value of a human connection when you're going through something, and like the touch of a mother giving you a hug and saying, I love you, has such a much more profound impact on someone than getting a text that says, I love you. And, you know, we can't try to substitute for that really important connection where you can read into someone's eyes and be like, okay, what are they really going through? What's really going on? That you can cut through that clutter with your close friends so much, where you have those deep relationships.
Not just, you know, I love Rosetto, but it's not just that study. There are just study after study, you know, going back to the study with men, essentially 30 years ago, 55% of men reported at least having six close friends. Today, that's essentially cut in half. 27% of men have six or more close friends. And if you think about like in the context of how do we think about like our pillars or our pyramid and what we prioritize, you know, there's a study that says essentially exercise can lower mortality risk by 20 to 40%. Having a good diet is more or less the same at 30%. But being a good romantic relationship, having friends, and being connected to your community can lower mortality risk by 45%. And so as we think about all of the silent killer here, and also if there was a drug for connection, think about that, 45%.
Right. And it's just getting worse with the younger generations. It's like an epidemic of just communicating through social media, through DMs, through text, the ability and the ease of natural in-person introductions, connections, building a friendship in real life is becoming more difficult. And we see this in the mental health space in general. And I think what you touch on in this book is like a huge black hole. Like we need to be investing in this for our well-being, for our longevity. And taking time to do that is critically important. How are you guys doing that in your family? How are you, you know, being the example, the model for your kids? What are you doing specifically to ensure that that is not just lip service and something that you're doing?
All right. Our next partner has a product I use every day now, and that's AG1. I started taking AG1 after delivering Toshin when I did some blood tests and realized that I had postnatal depletion. I had low quantities and nutrient status and a number of vitamins, minerals, and plant-based antioxidants. And I wanted something that was easy, delicious, and something I craved every single day. So after having conversations with Dr. Ralph, the head of nutrition at AG1, and taking a look at their detailed and meticulous sourcing strategies, I felt comfortable taking it every single day. Here's what I love about AG1. There are over 75 high-quality vitamins and minerals in their proper methylated form, whole food-sourced ingredients, probiotics, prebiotics, and adaptogens, and it's so easy to add to a glass of cold water. Sometimes I'll do a squeeze of lemon, but it's delicious on its own as well. What I love is it costs less than $3 a day, and I'm investing in my health. And it's a better option than caffeinating in the afternoon. Now, you can take it first thing in the morning, you can take it in the afternoon. I love a cold green juice in the afternoon, and this hits the spot. So, if you'd like to give Athletic Greens a try, AG1 is going to give you one free year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/bewell. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/bewell to take ownership over your health and pick the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. If you've been following me for a while, you know that Primal Kitchen is one of my all-time favorite brands. Their co-founder and president, Morgan Zanotti, is a friend, a boss, a mom of 3 boys, and she leads the way in the brand's product innovation. I know and I can trust Primal Kitchen in any category, but one of my all-time favorite products is their buffalo sauce. Primal Kitchen No Dairy Buffalo Sauce has a creamier texture than the classic buffalo flavor I crave. I use it on wings, we use it in dips, I make buffalo cauliflower, homemade fries for the kids, and I mix it into cauliflower rice for a great side dish. Now, I love that they use purposeful ingredients like avocado oil and cayenne pepper sauce, and this sauce is gluten-free. You can choose your perfect heat level from original to hot, or they just launched their new mild and sweet buffalo sauce that's great for the kids and a blend of sweet and heat. What I love so much is that it's bold and these high quality ingredients are made without xanthan gum. It's vegan, no dairy, and gluten-free. And with this new lighter flavor, it's absolutely delicious for all your kids at all ages. So if you want to give it a try, head to primalkitchen.com and use the code KELLYSFAVORITES for 15% off your order of $40 or more. That's KELLYSFAVORITES at primalkitchen.com.
There's this great study that our friend in Miami resident Lisa Miller did that showed that when the child was 80% protected against depression compared with mothers and children who were not living concordant with spirituality. So mothers who were more spiritually present, their children were more protected against depression. And, you know, this idea of spirituality is very broad. It can be spending time in nature. It can be something, you know, that's not as literal to religion or the spiritual practices that we once had. I know that I have a spiritual connection with the water, and I will go to a beach, spend 7 hours there, and bliss out with my daughters.
in a way that brings us, you know, so much joy. And those are the types of things that like we as a family have been prioritizing. In addition to like, we have to be very thoughtful now about, I think I've personally had this awakening through moving to a new place where we had acquaintances, but we didn't have any close friends. We didn't have any family. You know, those are the always the two questions. Why'd you guys move there? Do you have friends, family? Not really. But I've found that it is
Todd White, Mark Sisson, and Dan
Muirhead. I think it's made me so much more intentional and present about cultivating these friendships. And, you know, when you know this is a place that you're going to be, you know, for a long time, there's just so much value in kind of forging those relationships and really just encouraging our children to figure out at a young age, like, you know, we're always asking, like, what do you enjoy doing? What brings you joy? Like, we are really want them to try to figure out what makes them happy and what activities they actually really enjoy doing.
And just building off the importance of spirituality, I will also add, we do make our kids go to Sunday school as well. Mm-hmm. No matter where you are on spirituality, and again, like what Colleen said, it's broad. Like, and we go into detail, and when we reference Dr. Lisa Miller, who's brilliant, who is the authority on like the science of spirituality, it is so compelling for any parent who's concerned about the mental health epidemic, which is everybody.
Us. Terrified.
Like mm-hmm. as a parent, like it's just so sad. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole with the statistics around, I don't want to do it, mm-hmm. make me upset. When you look at the data where your child is essentially 5 times less likely to experience depression with some sort of spiritual practice. And the definition is broad, everything from like gratitude practice to volunteering to going to church. Mm-hmm. That is powerful. If you're thinking about like what you want for your child, like I don't think any parent wants their child to suffer depression and suffer. And that is real. And that data is just so strong. Spirituality for parents and children is so compelling.
And it really ladders up to the whole conversation, you know, around purpose, which is one of the pillars in the book. And again, having a broad definition of kind of describing purpose, I think we've done ourselves a disservice by being like the way in which we've defined purpose as this one role, or maybe it's a career, but, you know, really thinking of it more as what brings you joy, what's a higher calling, how are you caring for others? What parts of your life are devoted to caring for other people? So, you know, the same questions that, you know, we're asking our kids, like we're thinking about in our own life, and also realizing that as you go through the decades of life, these things evolve and change. It's not like this is my one focus in life. And especially with children, kind of how we think about our own purpose has obviously evolved and expanded. And I'm sure will continue to evolve and expand over the coming decades.
And in the book, we go into great detail of all the questions people can ask. But, you know, my personal favorite is, are you looking forward or are you looking backward? Find yourself reminiscing about the past, going through old photos. And there's always a time for that. But, you know, again, if you start to look at the studies, you know, this notion of being excited about the future, looking forward, hope, that really is powerful. And you think about longevity and not just living long, but also being happy, being joyful.
I think what a nugget, a golden nugget from today's podcast that I'm going to take away is when you talked about how much influence we have over our own and our children's happiness, because that is such a major goal for so many parents. Chris and I have had this conversation a million times. Like, I don't care if he's a, you know, our kids are lawyers or doctors or what the world would be like. Oh, that's a professional career, an iBanker. You know, he's like, I don't care. Like, you'd be an artist, you'd be a surfer. Like, he could be a barista. If they're happy and they feel fulfilled in their life and they have community and they have joy, like, we will, and they have support from us and their, you know, whoever else is here in their family and still alive and able to give that, I'm going to feel fulfilled. And I feel the exact same way, but I also am someone who likes to know the science behind things because it keeps me motivated to say, sign up for a charity that we can start supporting together. That means a lot. And to take care of other people or to have a spiritual practice or gratitude practice that we just do daily as a family, as a reminder for them that it can be a fabric of their life and really woven in to protect them.
Yeah. And we love what you said is whatever our kids want to be, I will caveat it with there's a disturbing trend where I think there's a survey where 86% of people between 13 and 38 want to be social media influencers, which is also a somewhat. So that's our one caveat. You can be whatever you want, but.
Yeah. But that's probably good that you pull that one out, just because as someone who I would consider an accidental influencer.
Yes.
It comes with unnecessary pressures. And I think a lot for a lot of people that have built a career and it's been sort of like an ancillary part of it. I've had this conversation with Chris Kresser. I've had it with like other people in the industry where you're like, I'm looking for an exit strategy off social media. Like this is, I love these podcast interviews. I feel like I grow and I learn and like I can be a constant student. I love reading the books in the wellness space. I love providing people with motivating content, but we touched on it earlier in the show. Like the algorithm of social media wants controversy. They want polarizing beliefs. They want narrow beliefs where there's no room for the gray. It's black, it's white, it's battling comments in your feed, it's negativity, and it just doesn't sit right. So I think I'd rather have a lower engagement on something that is positive and life-giving and easy than to create a wildfire online and accept that knowing, okay, this is like, this is where I'm at because the goal was never to be an influencer.
Just and just to be clear, I don't think we want to knock all influencers, but it's just like being famous for the sake of being famous. I think it's a problem. You know, what's the void someone's looking to fill? You know, the idea that you need constant validation with likes, and it leads to, again, as we talk about the mental health conversation, it leads to a place that's not good. And, you know, you did mention the algorithm and a statistic that we share in the book, which really stood out to us is Warden studied the most viral articles in the New York Times, the most emailed lists, like the most widely read articles in the world, and analyzed them by emotion. And the top three were anxiety, awe, and anger. Guess what was number one?
Anger.
Anger increased the chances of virality by 34%. So, okay, what does that mean? Well, anger drives clicks. Anger drives revenue, engagement. And so if you're looking for attention, if you're looking to stay in business or build a brand, you kind of have to resort to anger. It's unfortunately very effective, and it's a hell of a lot easier than creating awe.
Got this framework, which you've obviously already incorporated into your own life from how you think about your brand and how you navigate all things. But Arthur Brooks has this great term of like your personal mission statement and writing it down and what it means to you in terms of being in service to yourself and to others. And if, you know, the only goal is to be as big as you possibly could be, you would be coming out with polarizing statements, but you have to continually check in on your own values as a individual, as a couple, and as a family, and make sure the life you're living is actually the life you want to be living.
Mm-hmm. It's really easy to get caught up in the shoulds and following trends. And it really, it is about intentional living. The joy of well-being is about being intentional with the things that really move the needle towards your health, towards getting you to a place where you can look in the rearview mirror, Jason, and say, wow, let's reminisce on the fact that we did pour our attention into, and maybe it's 10% of your time or 5% of your time or 2% of your time saying what's important to us instead of just going through the motions of it's school, you have practice, we're eating dinner, this is what we're doing, I got that email, I'm responding. You're really just more saying like, well, what do I want this day, this week, this year, this life to look like? And we have so much more control. We just need to carve just a few minutes apart from actual doing to say, like, what do I want to be doing?
Yeah, I think, you know, most people listening, I'm going to take a guess, are probably relatively healthy.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they're going to be on their deathbed looking back and say, you know, I wish I would have measured my VO2 max earlier.
What was my lactate levels?
What was my lactate? I think they're going to be saying, you know, maybe I wish I would have taken my kid to drop off, or I wish we would have taken that vacation, or I wish I would have kept in touch with that person. And again, like for those who aren't relatively healthy, and people generally know that, yeah, like maybe they regret not taking the doctor seriously or listening to you when you made recommendations on what they should be eating. Yes, should regret that. Listen to Kelly. But for the most part, for the people who are relatively healthy, I think it does come back to connection and purpose upon that reflection.
So if you were to give people one or two pieces of homework after today's podcast of something that they can do right now that is in line with your ease and attainability and in line with your new book, what would you tell people to do? They're just finishing this podcast. What would be impactful for their well-being from one of your practices?
So my quick two things, I'm going to come back to the stairs. It's like there's stairs in everyone's lives for the most part. Take the stairs. Always take the stairs unless it's exhausting, unless it's just too much or you can't for some reason, or physically you're unable, or maybe you're for various reasons, but take the stairs. It's such a win for your cardiovascular health. And you always have the time. The other one, with regards to connection, you know, if you're listening, you may say, oh, I have lost touch. We had Esther Perel on our show and we talked about this very subject. And I thought her advice was very sound and we included it in the book. And it's this idea of, you know, just shooting a text and say, hey, been thinking about you. Hope you're well. You know, would love to reconnect. And it's a really simple text message. You know, something crossed my mind. I thought of you at this moment. You could make it up. And you're going to get an understanding very quickly if that person is willing to reconnect. And when I've done that, yeah, I've been pleasantly surprised. And it's that simple. It's text. You don't have to, you know, 20 years ago, pick up the phone and voice. Who is this? Frank caller. Now text. Hey, so-and-so, been thinking about you. Wanted to reach out. How are you doing? It's that simple. And, you know, to build off what Chris said too, okay, maybe my friends have moved away, different time zones. Don't estimate, like, real casual connections can be meaningful. It can be with the barista. What's their name? Hey, how are you doing? What's going on? It can be small talk, but that's a little bit more meaningful. That actually can go a long way.
I would ask themselves, what's bringing me joy? And being able to connect to things outside of their work, outside of the things they have to do, that really brings that spark into life and connects them with a higher, more transcendent purpose.
Coming for you on that pickle court, Colleen. Are you ready? No. Are you ready?
Just kidding.
I'm ready. Bring it. Jason, I have to tell you, as a dad of daughters, you're bringing me back to my dad. And it wasn't the stairs, but it was every single parking lot he would ever park in. He would park in the very last spot, the furthest from the door, like Costco, like warehouse box store. We are in the last spot. And he would always say, what? When else are we walking? We're walking. This counts. And he would walk us, you know, we would all be like, Dad, there's a spot up front. And he would just be like, nope. So you hold strong on those stairs.
I love that.
Your girls will have phenomenal memories of you being a stick in the mud about the stairs. And it's just sweet. It's a good way to tease them and get them moving. And they're going to have some fond memories of that.
I love it. Now I'm going to start parking further out.
Well, now that you're not in the city, you'll get like some bigger, well, you are in Miami, but not New York. You get some bigger parking lots. You'll park to the house. In the farthest spot, he was always such a tease, and it's just, I have a special place in my heart for girl dads. So super cool. Well, let's tell everyone, I mean, if they don't already know, at MindBodyGreen is your MindBodyGreen Instagram. You have Jason Wacob and Colleen Wacob, and then your new book, The Joy of Wellbeing. Where can they find you? Where can they follow along? Where can they learn more?
You can find the book at every major retailer and go to thejoyofwellbeing.com, where if you pre-order, we got lots of fun offers for you. And so that's where everything is, thejoyofwellbeing.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. It's always fun to see you guys.
Oh, thank you so much, Kelly. Likewise.
thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.